On today's version of the DFA podcast, we talk about the San Diego Padres. We also talk about San Diego Padres and the Friars. You might also know them as the San Diego Padres. It's all here on the SDFA podcast.
Welcome to episode 32 of the DFA podcast. I am your host, Brian Grosnick, and joining me, as is our routine, is RJ Anderson of CBS Sports. RJ, how's it going?
It's going well, but you realize we now have two more episodes almost than there are major league teams. That's a little concerning, right?
Oh, yeah. It's very concerning that they've let us be on the air, so to speak, for this long. So, yeah,
I would be that we've let ourselves be on the air for this long, Brian.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, as we're in the end of September, we don't have a lot of thrilling transactions to talk about. This is not exactly the best time of year for a DFA podcast, but maybe that makes it the best time of year for a DFA podcast because we can get a little creative with our episodes.
Right. And, you know, the news has been spare the last few days. However, there was one extension signed by a starting pitcher that caused some international waves. You know what we're talking about.
Absolutely.
No, it's not Marco Estrada. It's Clayton Richard.
Yeah, that's a fun one. We can talk a little bit about Estrada for a second, which I think we both agree, like, it's fine. No big deal. But we want to talk about Clayton Richard, but really we just kind of want to talk about the San Diego Padres. I know. There are pennant races going on. There's the last of the wild cards. And we are here to talk about the San Diego Padres and their position almost at the back end of the National League West. We're defying your expectations for a DFA podcast, aren't we?
Yeah, and I've been watching the Padres the last few nights, in part because they've been playing with Diamondbacks. So to be fair, you know, there is a postseason tie-in there. However, I think I've also been watching the Padres because it's an interesting team. Coming into the season, we kind of agreed they were tanking just based on the roster management and the talent level there. However, they're not going to finish with they're going to finish with one of the worst records in baseball, but not the extreme level that we kind of all expected, where I think we kind of thought they would be Giants bad. Of course, we didn't expect the Giants to be Giants bad, but we thought they'd be around 60 wins at this point, not closer to 70 wins. And so, yeah, they're not going to even finish with a top five pick, most likely, and that is not what any of us expected.
Yeah, no question, no question. I definitely picked the Padres to be by far the worst team in the National League West. Like you said, they weren't. They're a team that tried to run, you know, three Rule 5 picks out on their roster for the entire season. Those teams are not supposed to be good. Those teams are supposed to be very, very bad. So it was kind of surprising to have that be the case this year. So let's really quickly hit the Richard extension, and then we can go into some of our pet topics about the team. But so Clayton Richard signed to a 2-year, $6 million extension. This is his first year in years that he's been able to hold down a rotation spot for, you know, the brunt of a season. Kind of what you'd consider your typical junk-tossing left-handed starter, but at the cost of like $6 million for 2 years, almost any warm body makes that kind of a good deal, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is dirt cheap. And just to put that in perspective, he's making close to $2 million this season. He made around $2 million in 2016. So, you know, they're basically paying him what he was already making spread over 2 years. And it's interesting because, you know, they've spoken about you know, what he brings from a leadership perspective. So if you just kind of think about it from that point of view, you know, this is perfectly fine. It's not going to be the most exciting deal. You know, he gets some ground balls and bundles, but, you know, the numbers are going to be a little bit below league average starter. Doesn't really miss bats, blah, 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 blah. You're not really listening to this point to hear Clayton Richard Italian evaluation. The reason it's fine, though, is probably for a attribute that people kind of overlook at this point, and that's his ability to eat innings, right?
Yeah, I think that's the big driver here. If you look at Baseball Prospectus's DRA and his wins above replacement at the site, you'll find that he has been a below average, below replacement starting pitcher this year. He's been a below replacement starting pitcher for his career, which is absolutely fascinating that somebody would get over 1,000 innings in the major leagues and have a career wins above replacement number below zero. But yeah, he's just a veteran arm. He's a guy who can show up, and we talked a lot about the Padres not having any pitching talent at the beginning of the year. They might still not, but at least they have a guy who can show up and throw some innings and won't be quite as bad as Jared Weaver was before,
And
his.
to put that into perspective as well, Weaver was making $3 million this year. So they basically signed Richard to the Weaver deal over the next 2 years. That's fine, whatever. If he has to move to the bullpen, he has to move to the bullpen. If they designate him for assignment, whatever, it really makes no difference. This is a perfectly fine deal, and it seems to reward someone who, frankly, I don't think any of us expected would be rewarded.
No.
So good for Clayton Richard. I've never heard anything bad about him other than, his pitching numbers. But again, good for him.
Yeah, and this also makes him probably the longest tenured. He did play for the Cubs last year, got that ring, but as a San Diego Padre, he was with the team up to like 6 or 7 years ago. So, for a young team, a team that keeps transitioning out players, doesn't have a lot of long-term guys, he's kind of an interesting case in somebody who's a long-time Padre. So that's kind of neat too.
Yeah, this is apparently the part of the seventh season he's spent in San Diego. And I will say, his career numbers are probably better than you anticipate. Like, did you know he has a 90 career ERA plus?
No, I would not have guessed that.
Me neither. I would have thought it was much lower. So obviously that's still, below starting pitching average, but that's not bad for a guy who, frankly, has never really blown you away with stuff or success. So.
Yeah, absolutely. So, we've talked about the old guy in the Padres rotation. Why don't we talk a little bit about the game last night and the one young, talented pitcher supposedly in the Padres rotation? That's Dinelson Lamet. I think it's worth talking a little bit about, him and what his kind of emergence this year might mean for the Padres going forward.
Yeah, we talked about Lamet earlier in the year when he kind of came out of nowhere to make a few successful starts. Last night, if you were not watching, he pitched against the Diamondbacks, 5 1/3 innings, 6 hits, 6 runs, all earned, 4 strikeouts and a walk. He gave up 3 home runs, which big negative. But the thing is, entering the game, he had a nice little run of starts. He had 4 consecutive quality starts. You go back to the All-Star break and what he had done since then. He had posted a 3 ERA in 11 starts, 63 innings, allowed 42 hits, struck out 73 batters, walked 32, and here's the kicker: he gave up 4 home runs. Excuse me, he's given up 4 home runs leading into last night. He gave up 3 home runs last night, so he almost doubled his second half total in a single start. The story here remains basically the same. The dude has a really good fastball slider combination, no changeup to speak of, and that puts him in this weird, I don't want to say tweener role, but it puts him in that weird dimension where you're not quite sure if he is a average to slightly above average starter heading forward or if he's bound for the bullpen. And Brian, I remember you being a little bit lower on Lamet than I was back in the day. Has anything changed in your opinion?
Yeah, he's been more, he kept up this K rate, and that's the thing that I was most down on him about, is that the K rate would be more of an artifact of a small sample versus something that would be a little bit more sustainable over time. And now we've got more than 100 innings of him striking out, 11 guys per nine or whatever it's found, ended up being. The home runs are definitely worrisome. I mean, especially playing in Petco most of the time. I mean, there's no shame in giving up 3 home runs to the Diamondbacks. JD Martinez is going to hit a home run off you. It doesn't matter who you are. So I don't want to make too much out of one particular game where you're playing against the Diamondbacks. But the home runs are going to be an issue, but at the same time, when you strike out as many guys as Lamet does, when you have like relatively low wear and tear on your arm, I don't see any reason why he can't be like a number three guy, a middle of the rotation starter for the Padres going forward now. And that is very different than how I felt at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment too. He still has things to work on in addition to lacking a changeup. You know, his command waivers, which, you know, most young pitchers command waiver,
Course.
and his breaking ball is a little bit too inconsistent to call it, you know, I think it's a plus pitch. I don't know if it's a plus-plus pitch because there is some inconsistency there. However, it's really pretty when it's on. And, you know, I was thinking about last night, and I don't know. I'm not sure if I would go higher than a number three. I think that's, I mean, to be clear, that's a pretty good pitcher if you're number three,
Right.
especially he was not on prospect list entering the season. I do have concerns about him versus left-handed pitching. And you look at his numbers, the splits, the season, he's held righties to a 532 OPS. Lefties have an 862 OPS against him and roughly equal amount of plate appearances. So teams are stacking their lineup with lefties. And he's getting hammered because of that. So I do want to see him figure out a way to neutralize lefties. I don't know if it's going to, you know, a different grip on his changeup. I don't know if it's learning how to use his fastball slider in ways that help him become more effective against lefties. But yeah, I would agree that he could be a potential mid-rotation starter, and that basically makes him the ace on the staff.
Yeah, it's I don't think there's any question at this point that he is the best starting pitcher on this team. And also, you know, you talk about his platoon split problems, you talk about the problems with his changeup, and throwing something off speed. You know, if you take this profile now, what we've established is he's a pretty good starting pitcher with one great offering and one plus offering in his breaking ball. You know, the now it looks like the downside aside from injury is that you could move him into the bullpen and have a very effective relief pitcher. And so the fact that his floor has kind of come up a bit from where it was earlier in the season, where it was he could be nothing, I think that also makes me look at him a little bit more favorably than it did in the past.
That makes sense. And since we're talking about last night's game, and since we're talking about potentially promising young Padres, probably a good time to mention Hunter Renfroe. Renfroe had just came back to the majors recently, and last night he hit three home runs, giving him 24 on the year. And you know what else he did? He got his OPS plus to 100 on the season.
Well, that's very impressive. I have never been a big Hunter Renfroe guy, but it's astonishing how much one three home run game can improve your seasonal statistics. I mean, that is just it's wild to see him actually kind of get boosted up from a considerably below average hitter for his seasonal line to, hey, guess what? We made it to average. Good for you, Hunter. We're all feeling a little better now.
And I feel like Renfroe is almost the Lamet of hitting prospects. And I don't know if we can still call him a prospect because of where he is in his career. He has nearly 500 plate appearances at the big league level. But when he is on, you really like what you see because the power is, you know, phenomenal. However, and there is always an however aspect here. Well, you tell the people, why don't you like Renfroe?
Well, I have always been a little bit concerned about Renfroe because of his strikeout versus his walk numbers. And I think that's the big thing for me. We've seen that in the upper minors. When he played in AAA in 2016, when he played in 2015, he had something like a 4% walk rate in the minor leagues. And that's a real red flag for me when you talk about a guy who really does kind of have to sell out for power. You want to see somebody who's able to take a walk a little bit more frequently. Otherwise, you're going to have a really low on base percentage type of slugger, which can be fine, but there's not a lot of room to really shine as a cornerstone kind of outfield corner guy like Renfroe is, unless you can provide value beyond just the occasional dinger. And I mean, we've seen that this year. In 2017, he's got a 290 OBP. I'm certain that's why he was sent down to the minor leagues, is because his inability to hit for average or reach base, even though he's got this, you know, pretty substantial power. But he had improved his walk rate a little bit. It's still kind of a question mark, especially when paired with a 29-30% strikeout rate. I'm also very concerned about his defense in the aggregate. He's had a very bad defensive season by the advanced metrics this year, which, yeah, it's just a single season, but if he's really going to be locked into a corner, he's got to hit in order to be a big league regular.
No, you're right. And there is a lot of swing and miss in there. And you're right that his walk rates have never really impressed. And I mentioned that he has nearly 500 plate appearances in the majors. During that time, he struck out about 28% of the time. He's walked 6% of the time. That's really not going to get it done because you don't anticipate that he's ever going to hit for a high average consistently. And if your only game is, excuse me, if your only hustle is power, you really have to hit for a lot of power. And, to his credit, he has done that. His ISO is 252. That's pretty good. I mean, you can't knock that, but he has nothing else that he's offering. And he struck out 101 more times than he's walked this year. He's played 114 games. That's nearly one strikeout more per walk per game. That is insane. And you're right, they did send him down for a little bit. And if you look at his numbers from that minor league stint, he played, and this is between, well, no, excuse me, that was moving back to the majors. So he played, what, like, it looks like 2+ weeks in the minors, which, I don't know how much adjusting you can really do there. However, in those games, he walked 6 times, he struck out 7. So I don't know, maybe he made an adjustment, maybe not, because he just really killed the ball. Otherwise, he had 509, 557, 891. That is crazy, even if it's just 61 plate appearances. So I don't know.
Yeah, and since he's come up from the minors, he didn't just have the 3-homer game, but he also had a home run a couple of days ago against the Diamondbacks, so it's been 4 homers in like 3 days. And I think if you look at his 2016 and his 2017 AAA numbers, it's not like he has anything left to prove in the minors. He hit 30 home runs at AAA last year. He's hit, at this point, almost 30 home runs between two levels this year. It's definitely the type of player and the type of profile where you have to see what you have now in the major leagues. He's the type of guy who, if he can't end up hitting enough breaking stuff in the major leagues, he's going to turn out to be a Mike Kessman type, 250 home runs in the PCL over the course of his career type of player. But the Padres could really use a bat. They've got Will Myers, and Will Myers is great, but to have a real power threat in this lineup, he seems to be pretty much the only guy they've got on the team in the pipeline who's capable of being a middle of the order threat at this point. So I wouldn't say they want to put a lot of eggs in his basket, but I would imagine that in 2018 he's going to get a full set of run again in left field or in right field, and we'll see what we make of him.
I agree, they shouldn't be putting eggs in his basket until around Easter time. I will make the point. Do you know how old this guy is? Like, you just had to guess. What does he turn on his next birthday?
I mean, I would guess that he's an older AAA guy because I know I've been hearing his name now for 4 or 5 years, so I'll say he's 24.
He is 25 and he turns 26 in January. This is
Oh,
an old
wow.
puppy right here. This guy is, yeah, you're right. They got to give him a look and quickly because what do you have to lose at this point? I'm going to raise one more point too. So this year, there's been a lot of talk about the live ball and or the juice ball or whatever. And wouldn't it seem to benefit a guy like Renfroe enough that, he should be okay? Because you look around the majors and there have been a lot of prospects who have came up with less fanfare than Renfroe has had, who are just slobbering the ball. Excuse me, slobbering the ball, who are slobber knocking the ball all over the place. Matt Olson, Rhys Hoskins, so on and so forth. I feel like Renfroe is in that class, right? He's a right-handed corner guy, not necessarily going to blow you away with his defense, but he can really hammer a ball when he gets a hold of it. Shouldn't he be, benefiting from that?
Well, it's you go back to the question of is the juiced ball helping hitters without as much game power than it is the guys who've got the big power? I mean, you've seen that really this year you've got your two big home run hitters who are posting, nearly 50 or more homers, and that's Judge and Stanton. But a lot of the guys who are showing this improvement in power tend to be the guys who had decent but not spectacular raw power and couldn't translate it to games. Your Freddy Galvis, your the guys who were kind of mentioning before. Power has never really been too much of an issue for Renfro that I've seen. Like, he's always had enough game power to be a legitimate power hitting prospect. So I'm not sure that it would affect him as much as it would affect some of these other guys where, you know, you've got all of a sudden Jake Marisnyk is hitting 20 bombs or something like that. So I really don't know. I'm really interested to see if we have kind of a continuation of the dinger spike next year. That's really going to be what's going to kind of blow my mind, is seeing at the beginning of 2018 if we're on a pace to have homers like we have this year. Because even if this year the juiced ball makes it so that players should be hitting more homers, you never know when it's going to kind of slide back the other way. Maybe there'll be an adjustment to the ball again to kind of counteract it. I'm really not sure. It's very hard for me to wrap my head around what's going on right now.
I agree with that. So I wanted to transition to another young-ish San Diego Padres outfielder. That would be Manuel Margot. I think, for all the reservations we might have about Renfro and even Lamet, I think we can both agree, excuse me, Margot is a heck of a player.
Oh yeah, he's the real deal.
Yeah. So that was good.
No, I mean, like, there's more to say about him, but if nothing else, his defense, and I know the single season defensive numbers haven't been incredibly kind to him this year, but the floor on him is very low, I feel like, because I mean, the floor on him is very high because his defense will paper over any inabilities that he has to reach base early in his career. He is a guy who I think maybe is benefiting from the juiced ball and a spike in power because he's got something like, I don't know, 10 or 15 homers this season, and that was never really part of his wheelhouse in the minor leagues. So, yeah, I think this is the type of guy we're going to see as being a consistent, if not an all-star caliber center fielder for, I don't know, 5 years in a Padres uniform unless they decide they got to trade him off to rebuild again or something like that.
I agree. The floor is very high, and he didn't receive a huge signing bonus out of the Dominican Republic. We're talking about 800,000, which is good, obviously, but it's not the huge six-figure, excuse me, five-figure deal or four-figure deal that, probably precludes him from signing a long-term deal. On top of that, I don't know. And maybe this is just a lazy comparison, but when I watch him, I kind of think Starlin Marte is his ceiling. A really good fielder who obviously adds value at the plate through his average and occasional pop. I don't know, again, that might be a lazy comparison. I will say it's probably not the best timing for us to be talking up his defense because last night he played an Archie Bradley ball into a triple. So, whoops on that part. But yeah, he's a really fun player to watch, and I've really enjoyed getting to watch him. I mean, just I think it was 2 nights ago, and as you can hear, our canine friends agree with us on Margot. He is worth barking about, fellas. But just a couple nights ago, he had this ridiculous run where he drew a throw at first base, took off because it was a throwing error, and then he stole third or whatever. It was just remarkable. It was really exciting. And sometimes maybe we get too wrapped up in the numbers and the production, and we overlook that, hey, this guy is just thrilling to watch baseball. And I thought that way about D. Gordon a few years back, and I feel that way about Margot now. He's a blast to watch.
Yeah, I completely agree with the fun to watch aspect of it, which is that doesn't make it a lazy comparison with Starling Marte. That makes it an accurate comparison with Marte because Marte is the same sort of very fun player to watch. The base running, I'm kind of surprised he hasn't been able to be more productive with his base running yet. The base running numbers at Fangraphs and Baseball Prospectus don't have him as a, lights out kind of base runner like you see with Marte. Marte is like one of the great base runners in MLB right now. And I'm kind of surprised with his natural physical tools. I would have liked to have seen him maybe get the green light a little bit more this year. He's only got 16 steals. Maybe that's an artifact of him being a younger player at this point, but I'd really like to see him kind of open up on the base paths a little bit, because he's very fun in that regard.
That makes sense. And I wonder if, well, I guess I wonder about the ability to improve your base running at the big league level in general, because I look at Will Myers, and since he's gone to San Diego, He's stolen 48 bases the last 2 years. And Will Myers' speed was one of those great unspoken aspects about him.
Yeah, he was considered a five-tool guy because of that.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. You really didn't see his speed talked about. And then I remember there was a play in Tampa Bay fairly early in his big league career where he beat out this like little infield tap or whatever that went by Mariano Rivera. And I was just like, this dude can legitimately boogie. Like, he's a big, awkward-looking dude, and he's got a lot of power and blah, 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 blah. He can move, and he was never a graceful outfielder for whatever reason. And frankly, I didn't anticipate him ever developing into a big steals guy because every time there was a lefty on the mound, he would take a one-way lead. He just didn't seem comfortable. And yet, like I said, he's stolen nearly 50 bases the last 2 years. You look at his extra base taking percentage, which means, advancing two bases on a single or three bases on a double or what have you, consistently over 50% for the most part. Last year was 63%, which is really, really good. And yeah, he is just, he's been a good base runner, and it surprises me because, again, this is not what I anticipated from a guy who frankly didn't seem to have the instincts for it. So I wonder if you credit this to the San Diego coaching staff or just to getting the opportunities. And maybe it's just a matter of teams not really regarding him as a base running threat and kind of, getting ran on out of their surprise, or maybe they just don't care because the Padres aren't going to be able to score him anyway. I don't know. I just wonder if, that's going to be something that develops a little bit later on for Margot. And right now, it's just a matter of getting him comfortable in the box and even in center field for them at the big league level.
Yeah, it's tough for me to really figure that out. And the other thing that throws me about Myers is that these numbers do tend to kind of change a lot from 1 year to the next. I mean, last year Fangraphs had Will Myers as the fourth best base runner in all of baseball, behind guys like Betts, Trout, and Jose Ramirez, and ahead of guys like Starling Marte and Chris Bryant and these kind of what we consider the classic, excellent base runners in the game. I think the Padres are doing something right, and I'm not entirely sure. I need to get into more detail to really figure that out, but I want to talk a little bit then, if this leads us to that direction, about the Padres player development staff. Because we mentioned this a little bit before, and I'm really fond of Andy Green as a manager. We can talk a little bit about that more, but I'm a little nervous how this team has been unable to develop internally a lot of offensive talent. And I wonder if you have any ideas on why that might be.
I don't have like a great, theory of everything here, but I would say that part of it's not having a lot of great offensive prospects. I mean, I know, there have been some players who have failed them. Raimer Laureano comes to mind because while we never expected him to be an all-star, I don't think he was supposed to be an above average player, and that just never happened for whatever combination of reasons. And Austin Hedges, in fairness, I don't know that we didn't get carried away with the Austin Hedges hype to begin with, because there were a lot of warning signs that he was not going to be a productive hitter. And, if you would have told us a few years ago he's going to threaten 20 home runs in a season, we probably would have taken that, even though his OPS plus is like 70. Yeah, I don't know. Corey Spangenberg, he's kind of interesting to me, even
If
though.
you had 30 minutes in the when will RJ bring up Corey Spangenberg pool, then this is your moment, but please go on.
I will say, do we give them credit for the development of Myers as a base runner? Do we give them credit for Solarte being a solid player? I know he had done a little bit of work with the Yankees, but also, like, just to throw out another name, Jose Perella. He has been really good this season. Do we give them credit for that? I don't know.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, you've had these for so many years. It seemed like the Padres either had the one of the top five, kind of prospect pools in all of baseball. Their farm system was always rated very highly, in part because they were so bad. And it just seems like a lot of the guys who we really thought were going to pan out, Yonder Alonso, you talk a little bit about Raimer Laureano. I find it a little bit surprising, if not an indictment of the team that they were never able to develop a player who could hit more than, 20% above the league average. And I don't know how much of that, maybe there's an aspect of it that's playing in Petco, though Petco has kind of normalized a little bit in the last couple of years. But yeah, when you talk about Hedges, I mean, I definitely was guilty of overhyping him a few years ago. I wrote a piece for the SB Nation main site about how he had the best chance of being a, 8 to 10 win player of anybody who was coming up, which it's like, hey,
Womp
guess what,
womp.
guys? I messed that up. He's got a 250 OBP. But yeah, because on the strength of his catcher framing, which is unbelievable. It is the thing that makes him an above average MLB player and still hitting like a complete piece of garbage. There's skill there, there's development that's taking place, but they also had this huge run of potential pitching prospects. When you had the Max Fried and Casey Kelly and those guys coming up, and it seems like they all broke. There's nobody who on the pitching side really developed into a frontline starter of any kind. You can't really give them much credit for Drew Pomeranz, I don't think, because he was only with the team for a short period and really had his breakout with the A's. I'm confused. I wonder if it's bad luck. I wonder if there's something going on in development. I wonder if maybe an overhaul of the, I don't know, hitting philosophy, but it seems like guys are hitting dingers, so I don't think that's necessarily the issue. It surprises me, that's all.
I agree with that, and it's worth noting the Padres just fired their hitting coach, so they seem to think there's something awry as well. And Tory Spangenberg for his career now has a 766 OPS against righties and has versatility in the sense that he can stand at multiple positions. So he's actually probably been one of their better homegrown hitters in the last 5 or so years, which is kind of depressing, but also kind of neat if you're a Tory Spangenberg truther. So.
And that's definitely a phrase, Corey Spangenberg truther, that applies to one Mr. RJ Anderson. I have been historically low on Corey Spangenberg, and this season it really does look like he's going to be a legitimate 10-year major leaguer, with some value as a utility guy. I just, God, the fact that the Padres have to use him in left field
It's
is an in
depressing.
It's a roster indictment. It really is, because
Yes.
that's not where he should be playing.
And I want to talk about one other position player who probably has, if not a 10-year career, at least probably a good 3 to 5 year run coming up here before we transition maybe to talking about Andy Green and some of the wild things he does, and then wrap it up with the pitching staff. But Carlos Asuahi,
Yes.
he has came up this season 277, 341, 376 while playing primarily second base. Those numbers translate to a 93 OPS plus, which not outstanding, but given this is his first real exposure to the majors outside of a little cameo last year, you'll take it. And yeah, this guy's gonna have like a 3 to 5 year career, isn't he? Where he's just, a decent to good second baseman. You're not really going to, petition for him to make an all-star team, but it feels like he's probably going to have one of those unheralded careers, and then when it's over, and when he's no longer productive, we're going to be like, huh, he was kind of solid.
I think that's a pretty good assessment of it. I really am excited about seeing, how he adapts to being kind of a 1-2 with Margot at the top of that lineup. Because, I mean, goodness gracious, that makes that Craig Kimball trade look like, from a Padres perspective, like one of the trades that they've made in the past that has really been the most effective for this team. Because if you get a top two guys in your lineup, even if they're more of second division regulars, so although Margot probably is more than that, but getting the 1-2 spots in your lineup for a relief pitcher, and even as fabulous as Kimbrel is, I think that's a pretty slick trade to be able to have made.
Absolutely. And so from one smallish infielder to another, let's talk about Andy Green. We're both Andy Green fans, which is not something you're accustomed to saying about a manager who, in his 2 seasons on the job, has yet to win 70 games in a season. And he'll probably get that this year unless they, reel off this 10-game losing streak to end the season. But yeah, Andy Green, he, in our estimation, is probably the next IT manager, right?
Yeah, I definitely think he is the next IT manager. He's got that combination of He's receptive enough to new ideas to fall into the sabermetrics guys love him category. He's well spoken, he's personable. He seems like he's got a good handle on his clubhouse right now. So yeah, he's got all of the he checks all the boxes for a manager that people are really going to like, even despite the fact that he's in charge of a very, very bad team right now. The one knock you might want to make on him is that the Padres are playing okay right now, and they should really be looking to get that number one spot in the draft, or maybe they should be worse in terms of their overall performance for the season to try to get a little bit better draft pick, but that's hardly a real complaint. Yeah, I definitely think he's going to be one of those guys. I really wish somebody would write up an article about him for one of these major, websites and talk a little more about him.
Yeah, I'll bug Jonah Carey to do that. But no, I wrote an article about Andy Green over the weekend that kind of states that, yep, he is the next IT manager. And I highlighted a few things that he's doing that, if you're not following the Padres, I mean, for God's sake, what are you doing with your life? But
Right.
if you're not following the Padres, you might have missed it. And one of those things I will introduce by talking about their defense is their shifts. And when you think of the Padres, you probably think of them as a team that's open to shifting because, Bud Black was there, and Bud Black is a sabermetric darling as well. But the Padres at the time ranked third in the majors in total shifts behind the Colorado Rockies, Bud Black, and the Pittsburgh Pirates. And what was really interesting to me is the breakdown of their shifts. Keep in mind, all of this information is coming from Baseball Info Solutions. So the Padres ranked first in what's called situational shifts, or to read directly from Baseball Info Solutions' definition, instances in which a team positions its fielders according to what the game situation dictates. That means playing the infield in, using a fifth infielder, whatever else you want to throw into that bucket. And yeah, the Padres, they're top of the league in that. And I thought that was interesting because not every team that shifts a lot but doesn't hit a lot plays those situational shifts as often as the Padres have. For instance, the Pirates, they can't hit. They rank 27th in situational shifts. So I wanted to ask you, what do you think is behind the situational shift approach for Andy Green? And do you think that playing your infield in, or doing all these little bitty things that aren't necessarily quote unquote real shifts, do you think there's an advantage to that, or do you think it's just kind of false hustle?
Well, I don't think it's false hustle. I do think there's advantage to it because even though it doesn't always seem to show up in the batting average on balls and play numbers, I don't. False hustle is, the kind of eyewash stuff where you see guys running things out, and I don't see that being the case. I think that it's a legitimate attempt to try to get an advantage, whether or not it's a big one or not. I'm kind of in support of it. My theory on why the Padres shift so much might be more having to do with their personnel than anything else. I feel like teams that already have incredibly talented defensive players may not feel like they need to shift as much. And remember, you're looking at a team that Ryan Schimpf was going to be the opening day second baseman. We all saw how well that worked out. And Eric Ibar is the shortstop by default because there's nobody else on the team. Especially before Swahe came up. You got Yenjirvis Solarte over at third base or at second base, depending on the situation. And he's a very good player, a competent player, but he's not what you would consider an exceptional defender. So I think that maybe Green's trying to offset some of the weaknesses of this infield by shifting as much. I also know that when it comes to the outfield positioning and moving things around, he wanted to be creative at the beginning of the season. They were talking about the possibility of doing a Jankowski and Margot in the corners where you could have two good defensive outfielders playing consistently instead of having one really great defensive outfielder in center field and trying to limit the movement of the center fielder. I don't think that really worked out the way they would have wanted to, and Margot's too good to move off center field probably. So I think it's more about this front office and Green trying to take advantage of the roster that they've been given, maybe more so than any other thing in trying to do all these shifts and everything else.
Yeah, I would note that they've even started Solarte at shortstop. They are really experimenting all over the place. And they rank 13th in defensive efficiency, which I would categorize that as a win based on everything you just said, because this is not a team that has an outstanding defender on the infield. And the outfield, they certainly have Margot, but other than him, I feel like their outfield defense is probably average at best as well. Excuse me, their individual outfield defenders. I mean, I don't know,
Jankowski is
maybe.
very good, but he hasn't really been that much of a fixture in the outfield this year.
Right,
And
because he's been hurt, and yeah.
the other guys like Spangenberg is a good defender, but as a left fielder, it's like who cares? And
Yeah.
you've got Renfroe out there, you've had Jabari Blash at times, which it's that's not a great sign. I'm totally with
Bash the
you.
Blash. Oh, okay, and the other thing that I highlighted about Andy Green is his pitching strategy, and that's because the Padres are slash were the only team in baseball to have two relievers who ranked in the top 15 in appearances that lasted longer than 3 outs. One of them was Jose Torres. He ranked 12th, and the other one was Craig Stauman. Yeah. It's on to me for Corey Spangenberg love, and yet that's who he chooses to nestle up with.
I am a hypocrite.
Yeah, and then I highlighted that Green had used relief ace Brad Hand 17 times, three plus outs, and that there was only one pitcher with double-digit saves who had been used more in those kind of appearances, and that was Raisel Iglesias of the Cincinnati Reds. So, yeah, so Green, you can say mother, or excuse me, you can say that necessity is the mother of innovation, and that he's just doing this because he doesn't have better options. However, I would consider this an encouraging sign that he's willing to try this and that he is willing to think outside the box and do what needs to be done in order to win some ball games, even though, as you said earlier, maybe we look back in a few years and say, well, if they would have lost three more games, they'd probably be in a better position. But I admire not only the boldness, I admire the, let's just say, the care, because it'd be very easy to just manage just like a normal team and take these losses and, think about the shiny prospect you're going to get next June. I like that they're willing to try.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I don't advocate for Green tanking his team. I think that there's a lot to be lost by trying to not field the best possible roster, and not do the right thing for the long term of the team in these like late we're not going to be able to contend situations. So 100% I'm with you. I think the care that he's shown with his young guys, with trying to be creative, with the way he's using players, absolutely without question makes him a good fit. It's kind of interesting. I do think the multiple inning relief thing is kind of neat. You look at the guys that he's using in that capability. I mean, Stammen is found money for this team. Like, it doesn't matter if he blows Craig Stammen's arm out because Craig Stammen didn't even pitch in the majors last year. So what does he care if this is not a long-term fix? And Brad Hand is just 2 years removed from being a starting pitcher. So it's okay to use him for more innings probably because he's still probably a little bit more stretched out than the average guy. So, again, it's playing to the strengths of his team. And I think Green deserves a lot of credit for that. Maybe the front office deserves a lot of credit for that too. I don't know what kind of direction they're providing, but the front office may not be able to build a good team, but they seem to be using the assets they have functionally.
Yeah, and it just feels like the Padres are going to have another season next year where they uncover a reliever or two and end up spending them out of the deadline for, much more than they should have gotten. And I would feel like Travis Wood has the potential to be that kind of player too. I know he's struggled in his return to the rotation, but it wouldn't surprise me if he somehow has like a Trevor Cahill style season, either in the bullpen or out of the rotation, and ends up getting traded for much more than he should have netted. I do want to call my shot on one particular Padre who
I'm
I've
ready.
familiar with. Are you ready for this?
Yes.
So last night I was watching and a left-handed pitcher named Kyle McGrath checked into the game, and I'm gonna be honest, I had not really seen Kyle McGrath before. So within like two pitches, I was like, oh man, you know who he's going to end up on? The Dodgers. And I say that because for one thing, he doesn't throw hard, but more importantly, he has an over-the-top delivery and a rising fastball. And if you remember the great Justin Marks segment of yesterday, by
How
yesterday, I
could
mean
we
like,
forget?
yeah, by yesterday, I mean like 5 months ago. But the point is, the Dodgers love those rise balls. And McGrath, he averages 87 miles per hour. It's not like the Padres are going to be, yearning to keep him around for long. He's 25 years old. This is his first run in the majors. To his credit, he had a lot of success in AAA this season, but I could just see this guy hitting waivers within the next 12 to 18 months, and I could see the Dodgers jumping all over him. I'm not saying he's going to have a successful big league career. Not saying he would ever even appear in the majors for the Dodgers, but I have a feeling he's going to, become the next Preston Gilmett, so to speak, because
Oh,
everybody knows who Preston.
high praise
Right.
indeed.
The point is, Kyle McGrath, he is a future Dodger. I'm calling my shot right now.
McGrath's kind of interesting in addition to that because he got a lot of plaudits last year for having a pretty sick changeup. And I'm telling you, if you can do the rising fastball and changeup combo and have those both be, if the changeup really is a plus pitch or something like that, that'll play off that rising fastball nicely. And, he could kind of nudge his way into a seventh inning role or something like that with that combo.
Yeah, he'll be stair-stepping, low change-ups, high fastballs. Hey, it's been effective for forever pitchers,
Yeah. He mixes
why
in
not?
one curveball with the high fastball. I love that combination of the high fastball, the rise ball with a 12-6 curve. If you can break one of those off every once in a while, especially as a lefty, you can really make people look stupid.
Like Barry Zito. We're basically talking about Barry Zito as the idea, like here, you throw that fastball up and away, and here comes the curveball, and they hesitate, thinking, oh, it's a fastball up and away, or they gear up to, try to smack it, and then all of a sudden the bottom falls out, and they look stupid. And I would say there are very few things that are more aesthetically pleasing than a good 12-6 curveball in baseball. Would you agree with that?
I don't think there's much at all. I mean, some people are really into the frisbee slider, but the 12-6 curve is my jam. I'm with
Oh,
you.
I agree with that. I mean, sliders are fine. You take a slider home to meet your parents or whatever, but curveballs, good 12-6 curveball, you put a ring on that thing, man.
I will say, as far as sliders go, I'm a big fan of the back foot slider. I love watching a good back foot slider, but.
You're a big Chris Sale guy then, huh?
Oh yeah, absolutely. For everything about Chris Sale is fun to watch, but that is a treat. That pitch, I love the intelligence and the precision that it takes to put one of those in the right place on the regular. That's pretty cool for me. But yeah, the 12-6 curve, the big loopy one, the one especially if you slow it down to like 75 miles an hour, that is extremely my jam.
Makes sense. Jake Odorizzi used to have a pretty good one. I don't know if he still
Oh yeah.
throws it.
He
I
still
haven't
goes
watched him lately.
really slow on his breaking pitches, like really slow on them, so.
Don't we all? And since we're talking about intelligence, we're talking about my jams, we're talking about future Hall of Famers. Let's talk about James Shields and 9 starts since changing his arm action. 53 innings, a 4.56 ERA, 30 more strikeouts than walks. I don't know, man. I don't know. I'm just saying that's a step up.
I'm excited for you getting pumped that James Shields has a 4.56 ERA. That's a really bad sign that we're excited that James Shields is now maybe an average starting pitcher, but I
Have you
hope
seen
that this is
new
the
arm
case.
action though? Because I'm afraid he's going to blow his elbow out anytime out now. It's not pretty, man.
I mean, you got to do what you got to do to stay in the game. I mean, he was right on the bridge of being out of baseball, so stay in the majors, James. Big, it's important that he continues to live out his best life, and if that means blowing out his arm to do it, I respect that decision. But I hope he doesn't. I hope he's able to tweak some things a little bit in the off season and come back and be the four starter for the White Sox that we desperately want him to be.
I will say it is kind of impressive that a dude who, he's got guaranteed money coming his way. He really does not have to do anything to, cash his checks and play out the string. I think it's impressive that he's willing to literally tweak his delivery in season for a team that's not even trying to win games, really. I don't know.
Yeah.
That speaks a lot to his competitive level and to who James Shields is and what James Shields does with pitching, because how many veteran starters have we seen that don't change anything and just kind of, get grace. Excuse me, get washed out by the waves of time and whatnot. And Shields is out here still tweaking, still trying to find a little something that lets him go out there and help his team win a game or two, every, well, no, he's not trying to win 2 games every time out. You know what I mean? He's trying to help his team win a game every time out. And I think that's impressive. And again, I think that speaks to the kind of competitor he is. So.
Well, I think that's a good place to leave off. We are trying to win every time out in this
I'm trying to
podcast,
win twice every time out.
so we are whether we are succeeding or not, it may be a little bit open to interpretation, but we're very glad that all of you joined us for this episode. RJ, you can find at CBS Sports, you can find myself at Baseball Prospectus, and you can find the podcast at DFA Podcast on Twitter.
Find Brody for us.
Sean Brody is missing in action. We are putting him on milk cartons as we speak. If you have any hints, tips on where to find him, you can also send us an email at dfapodcast@baseballprospectus.com. But RJ, thanks for coming on and talking Padres.
Yeah, no one's listening to this episode.
Well, for those of you not listening, have a good one, and we'll see you next time.